You're listening to Mockingbird. This recording was made at the 8th Annual Mockingbird Conference, held at Calvary St. George's Church in New York City.
Okay, everybody, we're going to get started. Thanks for coming and hanging out. What we're going to be talking about as we set upstairs is, once again, arts and culture in the church. Arts and culture outreach. Is it a ministry? Is it important? If it is important, why is it important? How do we attempt to do it, and how maybe can you attempt to do it? So one of the things, this is a photo here of the garage, literally the garage in Charlottesville. I've played there. And Sam here runs the garage. So how we're gonna start this whole talk is Sam's gonna tell you a little bit about what the garage is, the philosophy behind it, and how they implement their programming. And I'll talk a little bit about the Olmsted Salon, which is a slightly different version but similar genre of that same type of ministry, and that happens in this very room. And then we'll discuss those things. We'll kind of discuss some of the philosophy and the programming, and then we'll open it up and we can have a discussion among all of us, kind of covering the bases. So to start things off, let's have Sam talk to us a little bit about what this is.
Sure. So, and Brandon, I would say every 10 seconds or so. This is the garage. This is our art space that we renovated. It was a single car garage, and the church owns it. And we put in wood floors and track lighting, and we put in a hanging system for art. We host monthly art openings. We host potluck dinners, amateur film screenings, and literally hundreds of concerts. We've been doing this for 7 years. And it's owned and supported financially by Christ Episcopal Church. And yet, most of the people in Charlottesville don't know that this space is even connected to a church. And so why do we call this ministry when I'm pretty sure I can give you the number of people who have actually heard the gospel of God's love for sinners through the garage? I'm pretty sure that number is zero, and that no one has become a member of Christ Church through the garage. So why is this ministry? We're going to be talking about why it's important for a church to be connected culturally where they live. Mockingbird is sort of the headquarters of Christian faith meeting the realities of everyday life, but how can we connect to the culture where we live?
Yeah, that's great. So can you go a little bit forward? We can show you a couple pictures of what the Olmsted Salon looks like. There's so many damn pictures of the garage.
Sorry.
Okay, so I only have like six. But and you don't have to go as fast because I don't have as many pictures. But let me just tell you a little bit about the genesis of the Olmsted Salon, how we came about, what we're trying to do, and how we're trying to do it. I come from an artistic background, both in as an actor, a musician, some other things. And I had found in my life, in the arts, that oftentimes I was kind of living in two worlds. I was the Christian guy when I was at church, and I was the sort of like out there artist guy when I was doing theater or doing a music or something like that. And I'd been involved in here at Calvary St. George's Church for about a decade now, and we had been talking about what it would look like to have an artist ministry here at the church. And my heart had always been to somehow not be segregated in my own personality, and to bring those two things, and to have my friends in the world of arts and my friends in the world of church somehow get into a place where we could have common ground. So often, though, we Christians, at least I can speak from my own experience, in my experience as a Christian, I'd been indoctrinated with certain language that those folks didn't necessarily understand. And those folks were indoctrinated with a certain language that a lot of Christians didn't necessarily understand. The art they were producing wasn't Christian enough, and vice versa. So what we try to do at the Olmsted Salon is mix up those two worlds, is bring in the artist, Christian or not, it doesn't matter, as long as it's something that that we consider a quality work, and mix it up and get the conversation going, and kind of see what happens. One thing I will say is our mission at the Olmsted Salon is to explore life through culture and conversation. So our main ingredient in everything we do when it comes to examining what it means to have a cultural ministry and building the gap between the church and the culture is it's all wrapped up in that mission, which is exploring culture exploring life through culture and conversation. And then just quickly, I'll just run through a few of the things that we do. Right now we're hosting a play, we're building a professional theater in one of our spaces over in Gramercy Park. We have a jazz night tomorrow night. We have talks, we have people come in. Dave came in and kind of gave his book launch for his book on music. And we have all sorts of different things that we program to try to facilitate this conversation between these two groups that oftentimes are at odds with each other. So that's kind of who we are. Like Sam, we curate, but we can't. It's kind of hard to for people to not realize that we're in a church. Because we are literally in a church, so part of I think the chemistry experiment at the Olmsted Salon is mixing the fact that we're bringing in art that a lot of Christians are a little uncomfortable with because it's out there and it's in some ways an exploration of the law or life under the law, and we're making these artists a little uncomfortable because they're in a church. So I think the experiment is what happens. When those two worlds are brought together. That's kind of what we do. You heard a little bit about what Sam does. And I guess maybe we could open it up for discussion or questions. I'm sure there's many, many bases we haven't covered. Anything else you were thinking, Sam?
So maybe to sort of take it in three steps in the next 45 minutes, why it's important for a church to be engaged culturally, and then we can talk about why that's hard, and then finally, hopefully, if we have time, we can maybe help provide ways for your own church to explore these ideas. And so the first topic: why is it important? If these people aren't actually hearing that that they're forgiven. If they're not actually hearing the gospel, how does that minister to people in need? And so one important reason why it's good for churches to engage in culture is that it provides an honest conversation. So we have this biannual event called the Maker Series, where we invite three artists. It's usually a visual artist, creative writer, and a musician. Although we've had dancers, we've had actors, we've had furniture builders, and they present their work, a few songs or a short story, and then they talk about the behind the scenes. They talk about the failures and frustrations to sort of break the barrier between artist and non-artist. They sort of show their cards, talk about the things that we don't actually see. When we experience art, when the public experiences art, it's usually as a finished product. And so people are really intimidated by artists. They think that they can't sing because they're not on The Voice, And so so to break down the barrier, we have a conversation. One of these guys, he's a storyteller, and during one of these Maker Series, it was the art of performance, and he said that one of the key parts of telling a good story is to not be the hero of your story, and I think preachers can relate to this. If you say, "Here's what happened," and then I came in and I did this awesome thing and it was awesome and I'm so great, that's kind of boring. In order to be engaged, in order to sort of lure people in, there needs to be vulnerability. You need to be honest. And he said that this is the hardest thing to do, and yet it's what people are most attracted to. And so it's important on some level for churches to support the arts, because it's a great way to have an honest conversation, because you can invite songwriters who talk about being lonely. I mean, when is that appropriate? You know, when is it appropriate to sort of open up about these things? And so engaging with the art, with arts, is a platform to create honest conversation.
Yeah, I think to add to that, as far as why arts and culture outreach, I think for me, a big question is, where are you outreaching from? Because that outreach could look very different. Like, I'm almost positive that what we do at the Olmsted Salon would not work in my dad's hometown, which is Teague, Texas, because they don't necessarily value arts like they do in New York City. So while I completely agree that in all senses arts and culture is important, I think knowing your audience is also important. What does a culture look like where you're from? It might look a little bit different than it does in New York or Charlottesville. And so in that sense, how would you adjust based on who you do have, whether it's who is in your actual culture? The creatives might be something very different than they are here. And I think that it's important to identify those people. And the kind of umbrella reason why I think that the whole thing is important is because it's being a creative means that you have a certain vernacular. And that vernacular might be the only way to get conversations going with someone who's other. And oftentimes we stay in our bubble and they stay in their bubble. And I think welcoming the creatives, no matter what culture you find yourself in, is a way to find the common vernacular between you. So that's why that's one of the reasons in my mind I think that this kind of ministry is deeply important. What was the second and third thing we were going to talk about?
Well,
moving right along.
We're really, to be completely honest with you, we're really shooting from the hip. We're not going to be quoting anybody. This is really just personal experience.
Yes. One thing that's interesting is that you set up a place where you basically can call art that is not Christian good.
Yes.
I think that's an important thing to be able to basically, as the church, to be able to point to think. It's very easy. The church is often calling things bad, but rarely do you call something that is not Christian good. And both venues.
It for that reason, it is so helpful for churches to engage in the arts, because it allows them an opportunity to actually listen. Usually, churches see themselves as the place with all the answers, and that loses respect of a lot of people if they think that we're just talking. But in order to listen, the most respectful thing you can, the most respectful thing you can do is to listen to someone. Like, that's the highest form of respect. And so to say, and Mockingbird does this so well, you know, by inviting atheists who have important things to say into the discussion to actually learn from them. And so it keeps the church in a humble position to actually be open.
Jeremy?
I was just going to add to Craig's sentence too, that it actually also draws people out of church into a place where they need to start asking that question. Is there such a thing as Christian or non-Christian art? And why is that some distinction we have? And perhaps there's actually more of a left than we originally thought.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I had never really thought that until I came into the Christian art conversation. That never even occurred to me that there was such a thing as like Christian art or non-Christian art until I was faced with like, well, what about arts ministry? And as James, I'm sure we'll talk about later, about the distinction between art, good art and bad art and Christian art, and that's James right there, by the way. I think one thing that you'll also probably say is in line with what you're saying is good art speaks. And that gives us a chance to do is what Sam is talking about, which is listen. So as far as, I'm sure there's good Christian art and bad Christian art, but that's the label Christian or non-Christian is always one that has baffled me.
What does that mean?
What does that mean, and why is it so intensely important? But it is. It's very, very important to a lot of people. And again, am I just being like, fuck you, I'm not going to listen to that, or am I actually going to listen, as we're saying we're trying to do in our own ministry, to those people? I don't think necessarily that we should just flush that opinion down the toilet. I think that there's an important thing to learn, but I definitely don't share the opinion that there should be a distinction between Christian art and, I think the only importance is whether it's good or not.
I wanted to ask a couple of nuts and bolts kinds of questions.
Yeah.
First of all, are the artists who come, are they paid? Do they get some kind of payment for performing? As the news people say, if I could have a follow-up, please.
Sure. Uh-huh. So the garage, we have about, we're outside, as you saw in the pictures, and so we're mostly functional between March and November. Mm-hmm. Between that time, we have about 50 events, twice a week, averages. And we provide bands, we pass around the tip jar, the bands keep all that is given. We put in $20 for each concert. Not much, but a sign of respect. And for the Maker Series, when we host these events, we take the artists out to dinner beforehand, and then we give them a $50 gift certificate to a nice restaurant in Charlottesville just to say thank you.
So the artists know who you are, who's sponsoring this, even if the ones who come don't know this.
Yes. And so that raises a great point in that the garage was first seen as a ministry to Charlottesville as this gift. Here, here's this great concert. You saw in the picture the Lumineers played the garage to 8 people on a rainy Sunday.
Well, I wanted to ask if you only show your good slides of attendance or your bad ones.
Yeah, there have been some terrible bands that have played the garage. But,
So it is a conscious ministry of opportunity of the church to the artists who
participate, and
they are very aware of that. It's not in secret that this place exists. They come there, and somebody puts an envelope under their door, and they have no idea where it comes from. So it's
right, and that it's very. You just have to be completely open about this. Otherwise, it's a bait and switch thing. Right. Otherwise, it's like, hey, is everyone having a good time? Well, guess what? You're in a church. Like all of this is being done for Jesus' glory. And so I used to be embarrassed when bands would come and they'd be like, what is this? I'd be like, oh, it's this church, and they like fund the thing and they let me do whatever I want. There's total trust. Like, isn't that pretty cool? And like, oh yeah, by the way, like I work for the church. Like, I'm their music minister. And because I just wanted them to be comfortable. But what has ended up happening is the more and more comfortable I get, because I've been embarrassed so many times for later outing myself as a Christian, as a music minister, then it's seen as just purely giving. It's like, here, yes, we're a church. We want to honor you because you have something to say.
And you're endowing the arts as the church in this, with no particular church agenda, but just endowing the arts and showing the church values that.
Yes.
I don't want to take up all of them, but you talk about listening, and I'm assuming that means to the people who come. Mm-hmm. Do you incognito kind of go around, talk to people, get to know them, hear what they're thinking and saying, and then does that get recycle back into the church as it thinks about its way and its message for reaching people? Is that what you mean by a listening component to this, so the church learns something and then can think about it and put it into use what they
want? It's for me, it's not what I would say.
Okay.
It's not, that's not what I'm, I, for me, I think that the idea is transparency, bringing together these two groups, you know, the culture and the church, or the church culture. It's about cultivating transparency. And I am a little bit more intentional in the ministerial aspect, I think, in that it comes back to our mission, which is, again, exploring life. And a lot of the times that life that's been explored by some of these artists is very grim. And that, and so I encourage our church members who come to actually talk about the fact, well, we too, you don't have to sign a statement of belief, but just so you know, our doctrine happens to say this. And that I'm not, I don't need you to believe it the way we're talking about it, or to believe, yes, the gospel does come before the law, but we happen to think that the law is always a prerequisite for understanding the gospel, and it just so happens that you're preaching the law through your music, or you're preaching the law through whatever it is you're doing. And to also to answer your question about the money, we do try to pay people, but not what they're worth, because we can't afford what they're worth. So everything is based on relationships. So we're trying to cultivate these relationships. It's a lot of it, and I know this is true for Sam too. We're both musicians, we're both artists out in the world, and we're making relationships there. So there's already that trust being built, and we're trying to bring that in so that we can have a conversation. At least this is what we're doing. We can have a conversation that's not bait and switch, that is transparent, that's not demanding. It's just, hey, we're friends. We might have a difference of opinion, but here's where we see eye to eye. And that's, in my mind, that's like the bread and butter of our ministry.
Yeah. Any more thoughts on why it's important for a church to engage with the culture? Yeah,
Tim. Yeah, I guess about, maybe 12 or 13 years ago now, my church made a very conscious effort to engage the arts, and I was on the first initial committee that kind of got the ball rolling. We called it the Da Vinci Code effect.
Uh-huh. Say again?
The Da Vinci Code effect.
Da Vinci Code.
Okay.
You know, as Christians, I think we're probably all annoyed when someone who's never read the Bible tells us what's wrong with it. And what our senior pastor realized was that Christians were telling non-Christians what was wrong with the Da Vinci Code without having read it as well.
Interesting.
So we kind of looked at ourselves and said, you know, we have to engage the arts as Christians. And it was, I think, to a large extent, it was coming anyway. The Da Vinci Code definitely pushed us that way. And where that ministry has gone, which is very similar to both what you're both describing, but we have found that it's been tremendously helpful to have the Christian members of our congregation bring their non-Christian friends to a non-threatening environment
totally.
With great art.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the response is often, you're Christian. Yeah.
Right.
And that singer just said a bad word, or just sang about sex, or just did this, or this painting doesn't depict what we think Christians look at. And it absolutely tears down the wall between the notion that, you know, an agnostic or, you know, an absolute, you know, unbelieving person has about Christians.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
it makes conversation possible.
Yes. And then, you know, we have some data that shows that folks that go to these performances then will come back to a service.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, presumably a certain percentage of them become Christians.
Mm. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. God willing.
I think one of the things about Christian culture is that we tend to focus on words like purity and holiness and righteousness. And so there's a sense of what the dirt and the grime of our lives must be kind of overlooked. Like we're going to shine a light on the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in art, the really good art does the opposite. And so when we engage the arts as Christians, it actually kind of sets us free from our own desire to adhere to Christian culture, which I say specifically as being different than Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I think in our community, we tend to polish and shine, and art, any good art, I think inherently undoes that. And therefore, I think bringing the two communities together enables, you know, without hope, if we're only dirt and grime, then we have nothing. If we're only polish and shine, then we have nothing. And so together, I think, is the most beautiful combination. I mean, that's why I think churches often have gorgeous stained glass, and art is has historically been fundamental to Christianity, but I think in our culture right now, it's been made as something else, like we mentioned earlier, as being other, or needing a definition, or needing to be labeled as safe.
Well, it seems like it's been, and now I don't want to turn it into an art conversation, because that's James' job.
Sorry.
But I'll just say this, though, I think that a lot of the, like, Thomas Kincaid stuff, at least in my mind, not to disparage him, because James will later, but I think my view, because I can say this, I can produce stuff like that. I can produce shitty art that's Christian. I've done it. I can do it. I have my own Thomas Kincaid type stuff that I've done, and I'm like, oh my God, I'll look at it and think, What was the thing in me that created that? And then I'll have something else that I'm very proud of. What's the thing in me that created this other thing? And I don't really know what the thing is that created this other thing, but I do know that the thing that created that piece of shit is fear. And I think that that is part of the Christian art problem. A lot of the time they're working out of fear. They want to walk on eggshells. And that's the artist conversation rather than the art ministry conversation. But that's what I think.
If you could speak to the intersection, we kind of hinted at it a second ago. We're talking about the secular and the sacred, more or less what we were getting at earlier in the conversation. There is a bifurcation of those when we talk about the audience and who we're speaking about, who we're speaking to, specifically in the context of worship. Mm-hmm. And so the arts, as it influences the weekly worship of the church, that is distinctly sacred. And so speak to how these ministries in general, if you would, give us some insight into how they have affected your weekly worship. The garage being separate from the church but connected, and this actually being housed within the walls of the church. Within the years that you've done it, what effect have you seen, and how not only the musicianship and the artistry that you've seen brought in, but also in how it has affected the congregational response?
That's interesting. I'm going to be processing that as I answer it.
Okay.
But I would say that a benefit from keeping them separate, it's not the Christ Episcopal Church garage. Mm-hmm. Again, most people don't know that it's connected to a church. They'll sort of say, what is this? And then we'll freely say, well, it's connected to Christ Episcopal Church.
Right.
But a benefit of that is to remove the pressure from this ministry being the gospel, which is what people actually need. Mm-hmm. And so through that, we're allowed to maintain a vision. To keep a sort of a high standard, which, you know, hopefully we show good art, right? And by good, I mean it speaks to those deeply honest places in our lives, and it speaks to us there on a gut level. And we have good bands that are just really good, string band from New Orleans or, you know, an indie pop band from Brooklyn or something. And so, I'm allowed to say no to a band that I don't think is that good. Maybe they need to rehearse more. Or an artist that I don't think is a good fit for the garage. And because the garage is not the gospel. Like, Jesus says yes. As you are loved. And the garage is not Jesus. And it's important for me to keep that in mind so that I don't feel this has to be an open mic night. Mm. And it's like, oh, if you have something to share, just share it. And it's like, well, let's make sure it's worth everyone's time, you know? And so it's, that sounds snobby, but it's important to keep that standard and to realize that the garage is not the gospel, which is what people need. And yet it is a ministry. It's not really answering your question. So in answer to the question, I would say that there's not really a result in mind. The garage is not the gospel, it is a response to the gospel. And so it is saying that because God loves us, we can create, we can be honest, and not be afraid, like Dusty was saying.
Yeah.
And so that is the church's expression of the gospel.
Sam, can I help you answer your question?
Sure.
Well, a lot of people in Charlottesville think Christians go to Christ Episcopal Church. Like Christians I know, right? You told me this because of their experience at the garage. Like, so can you talk through that?
Yeah, a lot of artists will be like, oh, you're a Christian, you must go to Christ Church. And there are lots of other churches. And so I think they see Christ Church, which is downtown. I mean, we got lucky. We just have a good location. And so a lot of people are walking by the garage. And so as the word slowly spreads that this is actually connected to a church, they see that Christ Church is open.
Right.
There's some respect. And so I'm actually not sure how, like, what the result of the congregation is, but because it's an expression of the gospel, my chief concern isn't the result.
Sure. I was just curious if there was a result. And
I can speak to that a little bit, too. Is So here at Calvary St. George's, Jacob Smith is the priest in charge. And he specifically preaches, the law and the gospel every week. And he's been called a one-trick pony for it. And that's why a lot of us come, is because we want a one-trick pony, speaking the law and the gospel every week. And so your question seems to be to me, what's the fruit of this ministry for that service, for that congregation, the worship, I think it's a great question. As long as you realize that this ministry is a fruit of that.
Right.
So that's happening and that's birthed this. In the same way that it's, you have a ministry that's going and these certain things are being preached and then that births a soup kitchen because there happen to be homeless people.
Right.
This births an artist, arts and culture ministry because this is an artistic town.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that I think that it's directed, that it's gone backwards, as long as we're constantly thinking this as a product of that, rather than what's the product of this back to that, is simply that artists are ministered to, and that those artists are now more they're not excluded from this insular bubble that we've created for ourselves, and that is what I think the law and the gospel does when it's preached. Jeremy?
I just wanted to add one more thought. I think actually something to, when like realizing kind of in the midst of this sort of ministry, that there's really less of a distinction between the quote secular and sacred that we might kind of believe than there actually is. Because if all truth is God's truth, then I think something a church member who isn't as familiar with the arts might experience through such a ministry as this is that I can have a profound spiritual experience through art that I can also have in worship on Sunday.
That's great.
That, previously might have seemed some kind of like barrier for me.
Right.
That's a great answer to the question. In that it allows the congregation to experience the Word of God through whatever, a Johnny Cash song.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I'm curious how you... let's say, advocate for and promote these two ministries first. How did you do it initially in making the case, like to your vestries or whatever? And then second,
how
do you promote and advertise it now in the wider community?
Okay, so you want to know how do we basically get the vestry to sign off?
Yeah, how do you sell it internally?
It's such a great, wonderful question because we've definitely been something that's brewing here for a while, and I think that at least in my experience, we're still in the midst of selling it. So we're doing it. We have our funding. We're having these events for about a year. We did it without funding. We were just like, hey, let's like get our friends in here into this space. And Jacob wanted to have arts and culture ministry, so we would do it just kind of for no money. And now we have a little bit of support, and it's a bit of an incubation period to kind of figure out how this fits into the ministry. So I think that my answer to that question is, because we are definitely, we have taken a step as a parish of embracing this, but it's still a very tentative step, kind of going one thing at a time. And the answer is, just like it is for, as I would say to any artist who's like, well, how do you write a screenplay or how do you write a song? Is you just do it. You just do it. And the most important thing in my experience is, as long as you're willing to fail, as long as you're willing to fall on your ass, and as long as you're willing to receive a lot of criticism, as long as all those things are okay and you still have a desire to do this, you should just do it and see how it takes shape. It will take shape different than what we're doing. Ours is different than each other. Yours will be different. Each one of yours will be different. But that first step is the most important step. That's what I would say.
Yeah, that's great. We got started very organically. It was a Christchurch fellow. We have a year-long internship program, and she was an artist in residence and wanted a place to bring people. And she and Paul Walker, the rector, were walking by the garage, and she was like, "I just want a space where people can gather and maybe put some art on the walls and just have a conversation." And the door was open, and the organist, her car was there. And Paul said, "Well, why don't we just ask, Donna to move her car and have it in the garage." And then 3 weeks later, this band from Michigan, who we all liked at the time, said, "Hey, we're going on tour. We're going to play a lot of house shows. We don't know which venues, but here's where we want to play." And one of the places is Charlottesville, Virginia. And we got all excited and we said, "Oh, you could play in this garage." And they thought that was cool. And then they went back to Michigan, told friends there who had friends in Brooklyn, who had friends in Philly. And I mean, now, 7 years later, we're getting about 20 emails a week from bands all over the country that want to play there. And because we don't need to make a profit, we're not concerned with ticket sales. I mean, it is such a gift that we get to do exactly what we want. We just like, hey, that band's good. Let's bring them on. And it's a really interesting space. And this won't do much for you guys thinking about your own ministries, but the garage is, it's a really interesting mix between public and private. I mean, it's this tiny little room that's completely accessible. And so it feels very intimate and yet public. And it allows people to hear music for the first time. Like when you go to a concert, there are all these expectations. You're going to pay $15 for the ticket. You're probably going to have a beer or two. You're going to buy a poster at the end of the night. And all these expectations, it's like, yeah, I know what goes into a concert. But when you're walking downtown to meet up with your friends and you hear this band playing in a garage, you're hearing it for the first time. It's like what Will McDavid was saying, because you didn't control it, there aren't these expectations. It's like, this isn't supposed to be happening. People can't stand it. People freak out about the garage, that there's the cars driving between the audience and the band. And it allows you to hear it for the first time. And that's just not something we could have ever planned. We knew nothing. It took a life of its own.
It's not consumer.
What about external?
Music.
Right.
External promotion.
External
promotion. How and where do you promote your events in your town, city?
Sam.
We have a website, we have our first garage assistant this summer, whose job is going to be to put up posters around town, and that's something that I would really recommend. I mean, as we're getting into the last few minutes, things that you can do to help this happen, I would devote not much money, but it is a worthy investment to have a good website, to hire a designer that has their finger on the pulse of cool, at least a little. and to make it attractive, to hire an assistant so that the burden isn't completely on your shoulders.
I think it's the same way as like as musicians, how you get people to come to your show. A lot of it is word of mouth. A lot of it is getting those posters out, getting the website out, getting to know people like my friend Arlene Harrison back there. She's a community leader. And I think the more people you know like that, the more the word can kind of get out. Again, we keep repeating the idea of it being excellent work. I think work leads to work. That's like an actor saying, but I think that's true with this kind of stuff too. If you're producing quality work, that will produce more quality work. You guys started out at the garage. You were having to make phone calls. I remember being like, "Hey, you want to play? You want to play?" Now you're getting 20 emails a week, and I think quality work gives birth to quality work.
And just to say another thing, being a parishioner of Christchurch in Charlottesville, something that Sam probably wouldn't say, but I think having strong leadership and someone with a vision and an artist himself running the garage is so important. And then from just the organizational standpoint, having a rector and a vestry who gives that person the freedom to run with that vision, not looking for specific results, not looking for too much control of the situation, gives the garage space to take on its own identity.
Arlene?
Well, I'll start with saying I'm Jewish. And while I love the people in this church, Mark and Jacob and Dusty, with all my heart, and I'm president of Gramercy Park, and a lot of these guys work for our community and the church, I've never had a reason to come to the church. I've never had a reason, and I'm living here for 4 years. My fellow trustee is Tom Pike of the park. He's vice president of our community with me. And even though I've loved Tom all these years, I've never come to the church until Olmsted. This gave me a reason, even though we invite the church in for Palm Sunday, we invite them in to lead our caroling at Christmas Eve, but I never could get out any poster in 39 buildings that told people to come to a church service. Mm-hmm. Anything connected to, we have a synagogue, we have Epiphany Church. I'm not going down that avenue ever, I don't go to a synagogue, I don't go to a church, I don't do anything like that. But having this, and Dusty, who's wonderful, leading it, gives me a reason, and now I'm working full steam ahead. You have to come to the jazz night tomorrow night. We did 300 flyers.
Yeah.
And so it gives me an opportunity to go to my community and say, listen, you've got to see these guys. Huh. I don't even say it's a church. I say it's something wonderful. You meet great people.
It's great.
And we have an Indian family moving in. They're coming tonight. We have
tomorrow
new
night.
People that just came into the community. It's the only thing I can offer them, like this, that is so wonderful, and it's really about honest conversation.
And I think that what Arlene is saying is really important, too, because one thing that I always tell people when they ask about art and culture in the church, part of what we try to do is rebrand the church as a safe place. That's we're saying, again, you don't have to sign your name on a statement of faith, but we would like to rebrand this place as a place where you're welcome, and that's kind of what we're trying to do, as you just articulated so well.
Because nobody knows what it is.
Well, we're
and I think in this case,
she's like my New York mother.
But it's got to start, in my opinion, with the vestry here.
Yeah.
Saying that, just around the strap, they have to embrace it. I would have everyone in the vestry listen to the video, the tape of this conversation. This is wonderful what you do.
Well, thanks, Arlene. Well, let's do one more or two more questions, and then you can talk to us offline. We got to wrap up because we have other things starting, including James thing in a minute. But let's just do two more questions. Talk to us afterwards. Go ahead.
I love the description of sort of exploring life and the dialogue
way that you're talking about this. Do you ever circle back with the folks from the church that attend to say sort of what was there last night for us? Like, and disclaimer, I'm very non-artistic.
Okay.
So part
cool.
of it is my wife is much more, she connects me with good new music, and part of what I love about that is getting word, you know, just, she loves a long score set. There's part of that
awesome.
That she articulates the angst of loneliness in a way that I don't.
Well, let me ask
and
you
she
a
just
question.
Has better words.
Do you like that music?
I mean, I'm not super into angry chick music, but I like the.
But
the,
you said
a poetry to
right.
it.
But you said that you're not artistic, and my question would be: are you affected by artistic
yes.
things? And
yes.
I think that for me, that is literally the only prerequisite for coming to these things and being a part of them and being affected by them. Are simply because there are some people who are like, well, I don't know, music doesn't move me, movies don't move me. Theater doesn't move me. I'm like, well, that's totally fine. You may be dead, but it's okay that you're not. But I don't think that what we're talking about is just for the artists. It's also, I mean, these artists are also ministering to us
yeah.
with their craft.
That, and that's part of what I'm saying is
yeah.
that I feel the ministry of that to me because it gives me words, even though
absolutely.
She doesn't
absolutely.
Come up with the, you know, she wouldn't
yeah.
answer the question the way we do. She articulates the question much better than I ever would.
Right.
So
right.
do you guys ever circle back and sort of process that way with the folks from the church to say what did we learn from the way they do that or whatever?
Interesting. We haven't. We hope that people walk away from these events talking about it, but I think maybe sort of. Having the event and then sort of separately talking about it, it might make me too self-aware. You know, it might control the ministry rather than just letting a thing be what it is and hoping something outside my control comes from it.
I'm so sorry. We're gonna have to save your question just because I just
I'm
got.
I'm gonna ask you later.
Okay, ask me later. Because we do have to wrap up because there are other things to get to. So thank you guys for hanging out and.